This is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Ooh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation. Rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
All right, it is Tuesday. It is Election Day in New York. Big day in New York. We'll be talking all about that today. Also today, Governor Rick Snyder says he will drink Flint tap water for the next 30 days. He will drink Flint tap water, filtered, of course, for the next 30 days. We'll have the story of a $1,000 gun tax that has just been enacted in the United States. A $1,000 tax on guns that has just been put through by a governor here in the United States. You don't want to miss that. Plus everything else that's going on, including the incredible hypocrisy, sickening of Starbucks and Apple. We'll talk about that. And we'll spend a little bit of time talking about your health and fast food and everything else. On the program today, we'll have John Lott. We'll have Megan Barth, Jennifer Burke. It's going to be a big show, and it's going to get your attention. So make sure you have a pencil available. You're going to probably want to write a few things down so you can show off to your friends later about how smart you are. I mean, that is key. All right, so the big story today. The big story today is the New York State of Mind primaries. Donald Trump looking to secure 95 delegates. Almost 300, I think, up for grab. On the Democratic side between Hillary and Bernie. Now, looking at the polls, Donald Trump has like a 30-point lead. Ted Cruz hoping to secure something, although he won't get but like 5 votes after his New York values comments. And John Kasich, like the drunk frat kid that doesn't know when to leave, he'll just hang around. He'll just hang around trying to see if he can get a few votes and maybe a delegate or to and say, see, I got a delegate. I'm important. Donald Trump's best speech of the campaign. And it's been like 2 weeks, by the way. This is really unusual. That Donald Trump hasn't said something completely outlandish and offensive to somebody. Nothing. He's been like on his best behavior ever. It's crazy. In national politics, Donald Trump continues to lead the field nationally as well. As far as Republicans go, he's got a 9-point average overall. That's key to his long-term success, and it's key to his quest for 1,237 delegates. On the Democratic side, Hillary Clinton in New York, the average is just over 11 points. One poll had it down to 6. A Gravis poll, taken on one-day poll on the 13th, had it down to single digits. And you know, the thing is, I can't say. Upstate New York, Western New York, not going to be Hillary country, I don't believe. As far as the Republicans go, it's a complete wipeout. Trump's average is north of 30 points. The last 3 polls from Gravis, CBS, and Emerson show Trump up 35, 33, and 34. Listening to people talk live, it's not even close. And as far as a brokered convention goes, We've talked about this for some time, but I think Haley Barbour may have summed this up, former chair of the Republican National Committee, that if nobody wins on the first ballot in July in Cleveland at the Republican National Convention, there is no good scenario for the Republicans. It's all a disaster from there. I think I would agree with that. If it gets into a contested convention, if Ted Cruz comes out at that point, it's not good. If somebody like John Kasich or Paul Ryan or whomever might be thrown into the mix, they're all bad scenarios. In fact, let's listen to what Haley Barbour had to say. It's clip 9. Go.
Every one of those four scenarios is a bad scenario for the Republicans. That number one has got 70% disapproval among the American people, and a third of Republicans say they won't vote for him. Number two, just not as well known and has very high negatives to people who know him best, none of them are for him. Number three, it's the guy that finished third or fourth. Number four, any one of those.
What you're telling me is your party is doomed.
No, I'm not telling you that. Well, what I'm telling you is after the Republican convention, the Democrats have their convention, we're not going to have a bump. The likelihood is we will have a dip. But I remember 76 when Ford was behind 33 points the week the convention was over, that lots of Reagan people said they weren't going to vote for Ford, they weren't going to help, they weren't going to contribute, they went home, their feelings were hurt, they were mad, whatever. By October, most of them were back helping Ford because they didn't want Jimmy Carter. And let me tell you, Jimmy Carter's a walk in the park compared to Hillary Clinton in the eyes of Republicans.
Well,
so I think, thank goodness, our convention is in July. It'll give us a few weeks to get over it and people to start coming home. Gerald Ford lost by 2 points. Down 33, disastrous convention, lost by 2 points. I haven't forgotten that. There's a lesson there.
There is a lesson there. The point is, don't have a disastrous convention because it could be the difference of your 2 points or three that it takes to win. And Donald Trump, like I said, has not offended anybody in 2 weeks, which seems, well, highly unusual to say the least. Ted Cruz says he will not consider being the number two guy on the ticket. John Kasich has said the same thing. So who do you think Donald Trump should pick as his running mate? I've heard people say Dr. Ben Carson. Interesting, I suppose. A balancing. If Trump becomes the nominee, it's clear. He needs somebody to balance him out. You know, he is like acid. He needs an alkaline. He needs to get his pH balance of his campaign right and take down the acidity to a certain level. He might need somebody that has some more foreign policy experience. He needs a running mate. He needs a vice presidential candidate who can help him secure the White House by bringing some balance to the ticket, if that's possible. Of course, we're a long way away from that on the morning of the New York primary. Hillary Clinton should win with a walkaway at 12 points. Donald Trump has almost triple that lead over his competitors. Should be a big day for the front runners in the Empire State. It's Tuesday on the Steve Gruber Show. Back in a moment.
Genuine Michigan common sense on display every day.
And the colors of the sea find your eyes with trembling mermaids, and you touch the distant with tales of brave Ulysses, how his naked ears were tortured by the sirens sweetly singing, for the sparkling waves are calling you to kiss.
It's Tuesday on the program. Greatly appreciate your support. The hotline number is 888-900-9966, 888-900-9966. Go ahead, tune it on up. Get on board. Bottoms up for the governor. Bottoms up for Governor Rick Snyder, who has made a pledge that he's going to drink Flint water for the next month. Good story in the Detroit News about it, put it by our good friend Chad Livengood, the political reporter there. The governor announcing Monday that for the next 30 days, he will drink filtered tap water drawn from the city of Flint. In a statement the governor wrote, "I completely understand why some Flint residents are hesitant to drink the water, and I am hopeful I can alleviate some of the skepticism and mistrust by putting words to action," he said in a statement. Flint residents made it clear that they would like to see me personally drink the water, so today I'm fulfilling that request, and I will continue drinking Flint water at work and at home for at least 30 days. Snyder visited the home of a Flint resident that is part of the state's Sentinel site testing program, which has been monitoring the changes in lead levels at hundreds of homes in the city and filled up on 3 gallons of water. The home has a lead service line and, according to the governor's office, has tested higher than the federal action level of lead at 15 parts per billion without filtration. Filters are rated to handle lead levels under 150 parts per billion. The governor said he'll use the water at home and work for drinking and cooking for a month and will resupply during a frequent visit to the city. So he's going to go drink the water. Now, critics will say, well, why didn't you drink it a month ago or 6 months ago? Anyhow, Snyder was challenged by a reporter last week to try Flint's filtered water, which many residents don't trust themselves. I'm happy to look into that, is what he said. Flint is an impoverished city of 100,000. Under a three-month-long state of emergency, residents have been urged there to use faucet filters or bottled water until damaged pipes are effectively recoated with anti-corrosion chemicals that were not used for 18 months. After Flint temporarily switched water sources to the local river in 2014, it happened under a state emergency manager who has been blamed, I think, unfairly for what happened there. It was still the city council that was... You know, the move they were making was the right move. The move to move to their own municipal water source and not rely on the city of Detroit was the right thing to do. Unfortunately, the way they went about it was wrong, and they made mistakes, scientifically speaking, about the way it should have been handled. But Flint being self-sufficient was absolutely the right thing to do. It just turned out to be a very unfortunate way to get there. So there you have it. The governor stepping up. What do you think of that? Do you think it means anything? Does it change your opinion of Snyder one way or the other? Positive, negative, neutral? Does it matter? 888-900-9966 if you ever want to join the conversation here at the program. And we, of course, endorse that. The program's a better program because of you, the listeners. Now, I had Alex ask me during the break, what do you mean $1,000 gun tax? Well, yes, it's happened. It's happened in America. An American governor says a $1,000 per gun tax should serve as a role model for states. A role model. Now, if you impose a $1,000 tax on guns, handguns specifically, who gets hurt the most? That's right, those at the lowest income levels. Those that might need the protection the most are the ones that are marginalized and pushed out and not given the opportunity to legally own a handgun. In fact, it might leave them only with the opportunity to illegally own a handgun if they don't pay their tax. This governor, by the way, is in the U.S. territory of the Northern Mariana Islands, which put that $1,000 gun tax into effect just recently. It is an idea, by the way, first endorsed by Hillary Clinton in 1993. Steep gun taxes have also taken hold recently in Cook County, Illinois, also in the city of Seattle, and now with the blessing of a governor in a U.S. territory. The administration of Governor Ralph DLG Torres defended the new gun control laws as a law that could be a role model, he said, for other U.S. states and jurisdictions facing seemingly uncontrolled and continued gun violence. $1,000, an excise tax on handguns. Public Law 1942. John Lott will join us here in a few minutes on the program. Dr. John Lott will be here to talk about that. First, let's jump over to that hotline. Philip is checking in WFNT territory in the city of Flint. Philip, welcome to the program.
Hi, Steve. I think the governor drinking that water like that is just all a stunt. You know, if they had tested all the houses, now that it's been almost 7 months, I would have some more respect for him. If they were replacing the main lines in the ground that were built for people in the city to be a population of 300,000, 400,000, then that would make the water in the pipes move if they would shrink them. You know, they need to be replaced. Do you realize some of the pipes in Flint are still made of wood from the 1920s? This just can't go on. And that's not the governor's fault. That is the fault of a long-standing tradition in local Flint government of that's good enough. Because when you look and say, well, how are your records being kept for which pipes have lead and which pipes have copper? Well, they're still on note cards back from the 1960s. And, you know, nobody ever decided to set aside some funds to put that stuff on a computer file.
And you know what, Phil?
It's crazy.
It's crazy, and frankly, it's not good enough. Phil, thank you for checking in. It's Tuesday on the Steve Gruber Show.
Taking a closer look at the stories that affect you most with a big dose of common sense.
Three after the hour on a Tuesday, and it's just a damn sad thing. It really is. When you see, to me, it's heartbreaking to see 25,000 people or 10,000 people or however many people turn out for a Bernie Sanders rally cheering on Marxism. They can call it democratic socialism. They can call it whatever they want. At the end of the day, they are the tenets of Marxism. The government taking over the means of production, but you getting a chance to vote on how the government runs different things, which always ends up in a disaster. Case in point, Venezuela. That's correct, Venezuela. And now a new poll, a survey taken recently found that 43% of Americans under 30 have a favorable view of socialism. We have failed to teach our children much of anything. CJ Saylor here, Director of Free Speech at the Young Americans for Liberty. CJ, welcome to the program.
Hey, good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me.
You're a group that's trying to make sure that we have freedom of speech, which is enshrined in our Constitution, yet these little snowflakes at places like Yale and USC and wherever, all over the country, are so frail and fragile that they cannot be exposed to free speech. The University of Missouri may be the worst offender. They need safe spaces and safe places because Lord help them if they hear somebody else's idea and it's not their own and doesn't agree with what they've been indoctrinated with. CJ, what's going on out there with people your age?
Exactly. You hit it right on the head, Steve. We are promoting what we call our Fight for Free Speech campaign. It is a national effort with over 340 colleges and universities throughout our nation that's engaged in fighting back against egregious free speech policies on our nation's campuses. We have students that are engaged in, events that promote free speech on campus and promote liberty. Our students have decided to fight back, and we're organized, and we're happy to say that we have a lot of students that are engaged to fight back against these policies. One of the things we saw that's very, very concerning, Steve, is the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education did a survey of 435 colleges and universities throughout our country, and they found that 55% of those schools surveyed have policies on campus that restrict free speech in some shape or form.
Now, who thinks that's a good idea? I mean, here's the funny thing. The funny thing is these idiots, these Bernie supporters, these young people, will go to these rallies and berate people like, well, Donald Trump or whomever, you know, and say, you know, they're against free speech and they are against the Constitution. And we're here. You're not for free speech at all. These little liberal fascists that are foaming at the mouth, ready to burn books and create safe spaces and shout down and attack anybody who doesn't agree with exactly with what they agree. It is a frightening place in America.
Yeah, and it's concerning, Steve, when you have students that, you know, don't respect our First Amendment rights. You know, everyone has the right to express their opinion or view about an issue or about a particular candidate or anything. And if you shut that down, then you're totally going against what our forefathers put as the First Amendment to be respected. And so we're working really hard to create a culture that values and respects free speech on campuses. And it's, at this point, it's just really concerning. But our students are fighting back. The good news is that we have a national effort engaged in this. We're working with the administration to look at some of their egregious policies and to revise those. We're working across the board with some independents. We're working with some Democrats. We're working with all students who want to ensure that, you know, free speech is valued and respected on our college campus.
Well, it's what's disconcerting to me is not the fact that there are student protests. Okay, students are supposed to protest. I think it's part of what you do as a young person. You complain about this. You voice your opinion. You're somebody. You can be heard now, and you stand up, and you be counted. All right, I'm good with that. What I'm not good with is that they take over parts of university campuses. They shut things down. They shout people out. And the professor from the University of Missouri, Click, I think her name was, attacking a student journalist for covering the event. What is wrong with a group of people that we haven't taught them properly, CJ? Do people not understand that Russia, Stalin killed 50 million of his own people? Chairman Mao might have killed twice that many. Do people not understand that Che Guevara was a cold-blooded murderer? Do they not get the facts of history?
Yeah, Stephen, you're right. You know, I talk all the time to students and to people, you know, that are concerned about this issue. And I say, hey, you know, I grew up in Detroit. You know, I went to a historically black community, black college in Atlanta, Georgia, Morehouse College, which also was a school Martin Luther King went to. And I tell students all the time, I said, hey, you know, imagine if Dr. King and some of the others during the civil rights movement had been shut down and their voices were blotted out and they were not allowed to talk about the issues they were concerned about in terms of, you know, really uniting Americans around their issue. Imagine if that had happened, what type of country would we live in today? And so I tell students all the time that's complaining about, you know, viewpoint or they're easily offended is that, you know, a lot of minority students wouldn't be in where they are today because of the great strides that the civil rights movement made because of free speech protecting them.
No question about
that. It's just ridiculous.
You know, and you bring up the state of Ohio, and I can't help but, you know, tip my hat to Ohio State University, because Ohio State University has done precisely what nobody else has had the courage or the common sense to do thus far. And they told the students who were having a sit-in, violating student conduct, that they had for the rest of the night. They said, we want to have dialogue. This is your university. We want to have dialogue to the extent of that we can have a conversation. But if you refuse to leave, then you will be charged with a student code of conduct violation. I'm telling you this now because I want you to have a good thought and careful consideration. If you're still here at 5 a.m. in the morning, we will clear the building and you will be arrested. And you'll be kicked out of school after you're taken to jail. That's what Ohio State did, because that's what should happen. We will not accept the mob rules. Riots do not dictate the day. If you want to have a peaceful protest, that's fine. If you want to voice your opinion, that's also fine. If you want to push for change, we embrace and encourage that. But you will not shut down the university. You will not frighten other people, and you will not break the law. Good for Ohio State University.
Definitely, Stephen. We're looking at now a culture on college campuses of cuddling the students. Emory University, for an example, some students had chalked Trump 2016 on campus. Opponents to free speech on campus saw the chalkings and decided that they were now, lives were in danger. They were now,
yeah, because that was hate speech.
Emotionally distressed, and that they demanded that the school do something about this. And this is the culture of coddling that's going on our campuses. And so, you know, what I say to that, Steve, is and what our students are encouraging other students to think about on campus is what happens when you graduate from school, you have your job, and you're driving to work, and you see a bumper sticker for a Ted Cruz or Donald Trump, and you don't agree with what's on the bumper sticker, what are you going to pull over and say, hey, boss, I can't come in today because I'm emotionally distressed? You know, it's getting to that point that students are easily offended, and then they're running to the administration or or to authoritarian dictators to say, hey, we need you to do something about this.
Yeah, no
question.
What
happened to the time where free speech was valued and appreciated? And we need to get back to that, and we're working hard for our free speech, for fight for free speech campaign to encourage that on campuses to get our students back to that.
Well, CJ, keep up the good fight and keep the faith. Great conversation. Like to have you back sometime soon.
Sure. Thanks, Steve.
Michigan, born and raised with Midwestern values and Michigan common sense.
You see it all around you. Good loving. It's never the guns they're going to get. My opinion, I've held it for a long time. My father and I used to have these conversations about how you would really control guns in America if you had the opportunity. And the best way to control guns would be to control the ammunition. However, one governor in America, like we were just talking about, decided that he could reduce the number of guns on the streets too by imposing a $1,000 per gun tax. He also says it should serve as a role model. He's the governor of the Northern Mariana Islands. Here to talk about it, Dr. John Lott, the president from the Crime Prevention Research Center. Doctor, welcome back.
Great to talk to you.
$1,000. Why not $10,000? I mean, we're just kind of a random number. Let's make it $1,000 excise tax on guns. What are your thoughts when you see things like this?
All right. Well, look, they just lost a court decision which struck down their ban on handguns and all rifles with more than 22 caliber, and you know, they weren't happy with that, and so by trying to have a fee of $1,000, they want to try to accomplish the same thing. That and this is something that was bound to happen in the sense that you know, $10,000 they might think is just too much, and that would, the courts would easily strike that down. And And so somebody wants to see what's the highest fee that they can get away with. You look at Illinois, for example, when they were forced to finally begin to issue concealed handgun permits a few years ago, they weren't particularly happy with that, many of the Democrats there, and so they have it so that it costs around $500 to go through the process to get a concealed handgun permit. You know, I guess they could have gone for more, but they probably figured to themselves, if they go much higher than that, then the courts are going to come in and say, you can't tax away a fundamental right. And there are plenty of court decisions on this. When you go back to the 1930s, you'd have Louisiana, for example, put a tax on newspapers of a couple cents, and the courts came in and struck that down. And my guess is, you know, if you had a reasonable Supreme Court, they would apply the exact same rules to guns and just say, look, you can't put these taxes on and fees in order to try to reduce ownership. Now,
however, with this Supreme Court and the way that the court's been packed, I mean, Barack Obama has done a fine job of packing courts over the last 7 years, going on eight, with a lot of activist liberal justices, as we well know.
Right.
So do you really think we stand a chance?
Well, I don't know. I mean, any reasonable state of the world, it would be struck, 1,000 would be struck down, 500 would be struck down. You know, I just can't tell you with the people who are on the courts right now. That's one reason why this coming election matters so much, because ultimately the Supreme Court will be what decides this.
It will be, and with a 4-4 split, it's hard to say. Although I see, it seems to me that Chief Justice John Roberts continues to swing a little bit to the left on certain topics, but on guns he seems to be safely on the conservative side, on the responsible common sense side, I should say. He seems to be on the right side of things. But you have four anti-gun Supreme Court justices. They don't believe the Supreme Court's, they don't believe that the Bill of Rights, the Second Amendment, is an individual right. They think that somehow, out of all these individual rights that are written out there, that this one happens to be a collective right, which makes no sense. It doesn't even pass the laugh test. And yet, that's their belief, and I think that we'd be in deep peril if it went to the court.
Right. Well, I mean, in the Second Amendment, it says when it uses the term the right of the people, when that's used in other places in the Constitution, they realize that that is indicates an individual right. Somehow
sure.
It means something different. Some people believe in the Second Amendment. But, you know, there are lots of battles that are going to be coming up. And it's just not what level of taxes you can get away with.
So what other things do you see out there? This is an important election year, obviously, as you know. Today, everybody's going to the polls to vote in New York, huge state there, a state that has put in strict gun control measures, some would say that go too far. What do you see out there, Doctor? And we're with Dr. John Lott here on the program today. What do you see out there, Doctor, that concerns you this election year besides this $1,000 per gun tax?
Well, you have, for example, in California, it's extremely difficult to get a concealed carry permit. In Hawaii, it's essentially impossible, other than for security guards on duty. And those cases are bound to eventually get to the Supreme Court and may get there within a year or so. And so who puts on a replacement for Scalia is going to determine whether what the final verdict is that for that's going to be, because it's very likely that if Hillary Clinton or Sanders wins, then the person they would put on would say, look, you can essentially ban everybody from being able to carry a gun for protection.
Could now, they nullify laws in all of the states like Michigan, where I live, where concealed carry, you know, 500,000 people now have concealed carry, just shy of that number. Could they make it illegal for anybody to carry nationwide?
Well, my guess is that's not what the Supreme Court would do. My guess is what the Supreme Court would essentially say is if a state wanted to ban it, they could. I mean, right now, the presumption seems to be that when the Second Amendment says the right of the people to keep and bear arms, the term bear means to be able to carry for your protection. And in the Seventh Circuit, which includes Illinois, when they struck down Illinois' complete ban on concealed carry, they said, look, you have to allow people to carry some way, whether it's open or concealed.
Doctor, we have to leave it right there. You know, it's a conversation that everyone's crimeresearch.org to learn more about Dr. John Lott. Doctor, I'm sorry, but thank you.
Thank you.